Hi, welcome to Governance Bites. I'm Mark Benicevich, and it's my pleasure today to have Tony Dench. Tony was a senior executive in one of New Zealand's major banks. Then he was the CEO of a major financial advice aggregator in New Zealand, and now he has a portfolio of board roles throughout New Zealand. So welcome, Tony. It's great to have the conversation with you.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be here.
Awesome. My questions are you actually around that kind of interaction between the CEO and the board. So my starting question for you is, how does the board or the chair interact with a CEO in a good relationship? How does that kind of work?
It's a critical relationship. It's really, really important that works really well. So CEO's job to run the business on a day-to-day basis and get on with making sure that things happen. Chair role, very different. So chair role, kind of the big picture, set the direction, set the strategy, but work closely with the CEO. So very much around a guardianship type of notion for the shareholders to make sure that the CEO and the leadership team and management are getting the stuff done. So those two working together, absolutely critical, core relationship.
So how frequently as a CEO or as a chair, because now you've done both sides of that, how frequently would you converse between CEO and chair, and what sort of things would you be discussing in your out-of-board conversations?
Yeah, so out of the board cycle, I would typically catch up with the CEO once a week, and that might be virtual or it might be face-to-face. Face-to-face is always better, and in an informal sense. So a check-in, what's happening, what's going on, is everything on track, how can I help? So that makes a difference to CEO. CEO feels supported, heard, but it also gives me as the chair a heads up on anything that might be rumbling, anything that might be coming down ahead of the board meeting. So on a weekly basis, I catch up, often a little bit of a download, often quite operational, but that's okay in that sense, because it keeps the operational stuff out of the formal board meetings. But that crucial relationship, got to be weekly.
Right, so there's a really tight relationship between a good CEO and a good chair, regularly discussing what's happening. The chair almost mentoring, I guess, in many ways, the CEO, and providing help and guidance where necessary, and keeping the operational stuff out of the board meetings. So the rest of the board kind of assembles for the board meetings, reads the board packs, and doesn't have so much personal interaction with the CEO. That's kind of more the chair's role.
I think it is more of the chair's role, but every director should feel perfectly entitled to work the whole way through the organisation, you know, particularly direct to the CEO. I think it's very important that a director feels that they can go and talk to the business rather than wait for the board meetings and can be involved. So there's a phrase, sort of noses in but hands out. In other words, be nosy about the business, be involved and interested in the business. But don't try and get alongside management and do the job for them. So noses in, hands out, I think is a good way to think about it.
Thank you. So the next follow-up question, I think, is around the structure of the board itself, because as a chair, you know, you're leading this team. How do you get involved in the selection of other board members and what sort of skills you're looking for, and, you know, the use of a skills matrix and so forth? Can you talk a bit about that process?
Yeah, team is a great way to think about it, because it is a team, and different people will have different, I guess, hard skills, but also soft skills. So the culture around the board table is really important. Having the right kind of skills around the table is great. So the finance, the legals, and potentially technical skills if it's a particular sector. But all of those people coming together and forming a collective team makes the world a difference. So typically the shareholders will select the board. They may use a selection committee or a subcommittee or even an external provider to select the board members. The cultural fit of those people around the table is critical, much more so than the skills they bring. The skills will be more available than someone who really fits neatly at the table. And it's a balance. It's a balance between someone who will have maybe an alternative view, so diversity of thinking around the table,
yes,
as well as someone who will get along with everyone else around the table. So disagreeing without being disagreeable.
Right, yes. And over time, there's a risk that team becomes a little bit more aligned in their thinking and you get a little bit more groupthink. So how does a good board avoid stagnation of thinking?
I've seen some boards, and some of the boards I've been on, ask someone to take a deliberately contrarian stance to generate a bit of discussion around the table and see how things develop from there. But I think if you have the right people and the right team dynamic, and if the chair creates the space in the room for people to disagree and be heard, then that will generate the right kind of discussion around the table and make sure that there are enough voices heard. Some people are, you know, by nature expressive, and will jump into the conversation, and others will think and sit back, and it's the chair's job to draw some of that thinking out. If someone's been quiet in the corner, to bring that conversation into the table and make sure it's heard.
Right, of course. How important then is the information given to the board? You know, what depth of information do you need in your board pack and the board reports and so forth, and what kind of information do you expect, the timeliness, the variety of thinking in those board papers? What do you expect as a chair and a board member?
Such an art to put a board pack together. It's got to have all of the information the board members need without having all of the information that would make it operational. So I have seen board packs that run to, you know, 120 pages, 150 pages, and a huge amount of work to get ready for a board meeting on that basis. To my mind, that's too much. If a CEO is doing a good job, should be bringing, you know, the salient issues to the board for consideration, the risks that go with that. The board, by its part, in each meeting should be drawing out the action points for that as well. And those informal meetings that a chair would have with the CEO will bring some of those along as well. So that balance between having enough in a board pack to allow the board members to make the decisions without kind of overloading, I think is again difficult balance to strike, but a really, really important one. And it's the board members' obligation to take the position seriously and to prepare well for a board meeting. So if there is a chunky board pack, It's as simple as making sure they're prepared and they come along.
You kind of want, as a board member, the information to be as concise as possible, but to give a balanced view of the situation and the recommendation of why it's been led to, so you can have a considered view and also be comfortable that those that have prepared the information have considered all of the variables as well.
So,
right.
Again, the chair role to make sure that the board members have read the papers.
Yes.
But crucial.
Right, okay. So to take a step back then, what exactly is the difference between governance and management?
I think the management is the day-to-day piece. Management is getting stuff done. Management and leadership, and that can involve setting the budgets and setting the goals and working with the board on that piece. The board is very much the big picture. So setting the purpose, the shareholders will have set the company up for a particular reason. So establishing that purpose and making sure there's a long-term strategy that's going to deliver that, that is firmly in the wheelhouse of the board. And then the strategy that's in place, delivering that strategy, is in the wheelhouse of management. There will be crossover, inevitably, there always is. And that probably falls around the setting of annual budgets and the goals, the short-term sprints. They'll often be done in collaboration between the board and management, and there'll be crossover there. There may even be a bit of debate there when you're setting annual budgets.
Yeah, right, of course. In your experience, the setting of the strategy itself, is that something that the board kind of does in isolation, something that the management team kind of puts together a plan and suggests it to the board? Is it done something that the board does together with management? What have you experienced in that space?
My view very much is that strategy should be the domain of the board, albeit heavily informed by the people that are in the business and running it on a day-to-day basis. But strategy, to my mind, sits very, very centrally with the board. And delivering that strategy for the stakeholders and for the shareholders. What I've seen is maybe a little bit different to that. And very often it'll be the senior leadership team and the CEO that will propose a strategy to the board that the board will think about and often approve or amend. My preference would be to see the board taking a much stronger role in setting the strategy, setting the culture that'll deliver that strategy and make sure that ultimately the returns and the delivery of the purpose is going to be there for the shareholders and the stakeholders.
Okay, thank you. Now, you're a chair of a good not-for-profit board, the ones that we do for our passion, and as well as a number of for-profit boards. But what is the difference between what a board of directors does in a not-for-profit versus a for-profit?
Yeah, I like to think of, I like to call it, rather than not-for-profit, I like to call it for-purpose. And I think that's probably the best way to think about it. The not-for-profit sector is there for a purpose. They're there rather than to make money and to make a return for the shareholders. They're there to deliver what they were set up to do. And that for-purpose, I think, kind of drives how the board thinks. It drives how management lead it, and ultimately it drives how they make all of their decisions. So every company is for a purpose, and just some of them are the purposes is to make profit.
Right.
So there's a balance. Again, a balance between if something in a commercial organisation is being done that makes a good return, but perhaps isn't deeply aligned with the strategy and the purpose, they can probably do that for a short period of time, and the shareholder will be happy. In a for-purpose organisation, if the organisation starts to do things that drift away from its core central purpose, its reason for being, I think then board and indeed shareholders and stakeholders will draw them back to that purpose very, very quickly. So there's a question of balance. Of course, the for-purpose companies have to use their resources well, but I think often they can trade making sure they deliver purpose against an efficient use of the resources in the short term, so that they make sure they're doing what they're there to do.
Okay,
so for purpose, I think works.
Right. Does the discipline of governance change, or is it kind of the same thing applied in a different way?
I think it's exactly the same. I think it's exactly the same, and of course there are legal obligations that sit there even in a for-purpose organisation. You got to make sure that the financial rigour is there. And that the resources are looked after, because fundamentally you don't run out of resources. Mm-hmm. So all of that sits within the legislative framework. There's really very little difference, except I think in a for-purpose company, the purpose sits front and centre.
Yes.
And in a commercial entity, perhaps the purpose sits a half step back. With profit being the ultimate goal for the return for the shareholder.
Okay. Now you're not from around here, so. Is your experience of governance overseas the same? Is it, the discipline of governance, is it the same across the world, or is New Zealand kind of this outlier where we do things a different way?
I think globally the principles are well established and pretty much identical, certainly in the Western world. So I think what does happen though is you will often see a slightly different culture. And it is the board's role to set the culture of the organisation. So you will see different cultural attitudes and cultural approaches around the world, but the fundamentals of governance and management and how a company is directed really are the same the world over. It's a guardianship role. It's a stewardship role to look after the assets in the business for the shareholders and the stakeholders, and make sure that strategy, that purpose is delivered.
Right, okay. That makes a lot of sense. So the challenge for an international organisation would be really, the discipline of governance would be the same, but the mix of cultures would be a very interesting challenge to manage.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Okay, well, Tony, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. I'll look forward to catching up again soon. And thank you very much, everyone. I'll see you next episode.